Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Kicking with Keyword here on the Full Press Radio Network, episode number 53. Been a long time since we've been with you. Our last show was on Thanksgiving, so hope all of you had a happy Thanksgiving with your loved ones. Hope you were being safe. Hope you were following all the social distancing rules, wearing your mask as we all try to get through COVID-19 together. I'm your host, Ricky Keel. We got a jam-packed show coming up for you over the next... Usually it's like 90 minutes to 2 hours. So I tried to give you time because you never know. I tend to try to stick to it, but we never know what happens. We got so much sports to get into over the last week or so. Do a lot of NFL. We'll do some college football. There's a big game today, and it doesn't involve a Power 5 school. We're going to dive into that a little bit later. Also, one NBA player doesn't want to speak to the media. That issues statements. We'll talk about how weird that is, including a big NBA blockbuster trade involving two players that may not be where they once were, but still a very intriguing trade. And we'll get into what a little bit of the signings in baseball. Not a lot of signings, but there's a couple that I'm very interested by. As we get to the virtual winter meetings this week, does not necessarily mean action will happen. But we got to get a course start with the NFL. I last recorded with you when the Ravens-Steelers game got postponed to Tuesday. And then there was the whole report. The Ravens had the more tests kept coming. There was a report that the Ravens did not feel comfortable playing on Tuesday. They moved the game to Wednesday. They played Wednesday at 3:40 p.m. Eastern because NBC had the Rockefeller Center Christmas tree special. Just the thing. You can't move the tree lighting thing for a football game. I think the NFL at least learned finally something can't move for you. So they play the game. And the game, to be fair, for lack of a better word, was garbage. The quality wasn't good. A lot of drop passes. Obviously, the Ravens didn't have a lot of their key players due to COVID-19. The product was not good. And you go back to the Denver game Sunday, where Jeff Driscoll's got COVID-19. All the quarterbacks go to a room on Tuesday without wearing a mask, so all the quarterbacks are deemed high-risk close contacts, unable to play. The Broncos have to start Kendall Hinton, a practice squad wide receiver who played quarterback at Wake Forest. And he did what he could, but he only completed one pass. And we learned something this week about the NFL. Week 18 doesn't exist. They'll throw out Week 18. They want you to think Week 18 exists because it's a backup plan. I'll believe it when I see it, when the NFL actually decides to go to a Week 18. Because I still think they feel they're unbeatable to the coronavirus. They don't feel that they need to postpone these games. Because I tweeted while watching Ravens Steelers. You know when this game would look better? Week 18. I don't get the harm for the NFL. If the game doesn't end up meaning anything, you don't have to play it. You don't have to play it. If Pittsburgh doesn't need the game for the number one seed, or the Ravens don't need the game to get in the playoffs... Most likely, though, they probably would, because right now they're 6-5 on the outside looking in. Then don't play it. You don't have buys anymore after this week. So the NFL is going to run out of options if they have to postpone one more game. And I think, honestly, the NFL ruined the team without the COVID outbreak more than the team with the COVID outbreak. Take a look at the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I get it. This is a year of COVID-19 where you can't complain about fairness and things of that nature, right? Lost their bye twice. They've got to play another team on Monday in Washington on 5 days off. Now, why is that a big deal? Washington has had 11 days off. It's a little bit more. Dallas is going to have 12 days off before they play the Ravens, in a sense. So if you're Pittsburgh, why does the team with the outbreak get the longer stretch to play? I mean, you would think Baltimore is going to have sounds like Lamar Jackson's going to be back on Tuesday. So why does Pittsburgh have to play 5 o'clock on Monday and the Ravens on Tuesday? My only guess for that is because Pittsburgh has the Sunday night game the following week at Buffalo, and the NFL doesn't want to move that, which they shouldn't. But this is where the NFL has its issues, because Roger Goodell talks on Wednesday and basically says that their protocols are working and he doesn't think they got to go to a bubble. I want to explain this to the NFL. Going to a bubble or tightening your protocols doesn't necessarily mean you failed. Think about it. We're all changing as the days go on because of all the latest COVID outbreaks. And there's another COVID outbreak in our country. You can adapt and change the rules and not be viewed as a failure. But I liked what Greg McElroy said on Get Up this week. If a person who came to this country, watched football for the first time, and saw Kendall Hinton play the New Orleans Saints, they would not watch again. And I get people watch for the novelty, and they watch because they want to see if this kid can actually play, and they probably bet on the game. But the product is awful. It's not competitive. And I like what the way college football has it, where if you have a bunch of people on the COVID list at a particular position, you don't play. And I get quarterback is not the same thing as offensive line. But if you don't have a quarterback, you have no chance to win. The Broncos had no chance to win. And I can understand Kareem Jackson, I saw his quote saying, it felt like, in a sense, I'll paraphrase, it felt like the NFL was punishing them. Because the NFL, for all the, our protocols are great, nobody, and we're doing really good. Have they actually punished really anybody for breaking protocol? Have they taken away significant picks? Have they, they fined people? They took a 6th round pick from the Raiders, took a 7th round pick from the Saints. Fine the Patriots $350,000 after saying the whole time that the Patriots were following protocols. So what's going to happen to Denver? What's going to happen to Baltimore? And I kept saying to people I know that if I were the NFL, I said, well, the Ravens, after what happened with the strength and conditioning coach, we'll move this game. You got to agree to give up a high pick or you forfeit. If you want to be all tough and talk about how we can't move around our schedule, then you got to start taking away picks when teams violate the rules. Especially when you have the strength and conditioning coach for Denver. I mean, for Baltimore, excuse me. There is a blatant thing where you can, I don't know if you could really connect it, but you had one coach that wasn't wearing his mask, wasn't wearing his contact tracing device, and you had a big spread in the Ravens locker room. I get it. The NFL doesn't want to fail. But you could tell their arrogance. You really can. And you know what's the reason for that? We can't get enough of football. We'll sit there and watch Wednesday afternoon at 3:40 while you're working from home or you're doing what you're doing. You'll turn on the game anyway. You're mad at the NFL and you're still going to watch it because it's football. We love football. They could play football at 10 a.m. on a Friday and you'd watch it. No matter what the game is. Because you could bet on it. You could have people on your fantasy team. Do so many different things. So the NFL knows they've got you. They don't need to worry about the ramifications if we have to postpone a game to Tuesday. Instead of postponing a game. They've got you. And yes, I understand where Roger Goodell's coming from. They're talking about, well, we felt we contained the outbreak. And that's why they played those games. And I can see where they're coming from. But here's the problem with that. Is I think you look at everything going on. I think if you have a position group that is decimated, despite having the flexibility of having multiple players. If your position group is decimated, how do you play? Certain positions are more valuable than others, yes. Offensive line, defensive line. I think that'd be the only two, really, because we saw a quarterback, obviously, is not a situation where they would deem that you need the game to be stopped. And Denver should, all their quarterbacks have been fine outside of Driscoll. But Denver should get a punishment. The Ravens should get a punishment. You want to act tough and act like we will not stand for people that violate our protocols. Then you have to make a stand. And I've been saying this for weeks. For weeks. Do they have to do this? They didn't do it with the Raiders. The Raiders had 2 6th-round picks. They took away one. They still have a 6th-round pick. They'll be fine. And they were a double offender. Sometimes with the NFL, it's anything to get the gameplay. And you have to get the gameplay within reason, and you think they have. But personally, I wouldn't have minded Steven Ravens Steelers Week 18. The way the COVID is going in our country, it's hard to not think there isn't going to be a Week 18 anyway. You have the flexibility. You can move the Super Bowl back. You can take away that week in between the championship game and the Super Bowl if you have to. There are options. There are many things. The NFL has so many different things, and they had so many backup plans. But they don't want to go to their backup plans. They want to stick to Plan A and Plan A only. The way it is. And I don't know how you could watch that game Wednesday and be satisfied with it. Because the NFL kind of hurts itself when it puts a product out there like that. It shouldn't, because people, again, are going to watch regardless of the product. But in any other sport, we'd rip them for it. We'd rip baseball for what the NFL is doing. We'd rip college football. We'd rip the NBA. We'd rip the NFL? No. Not really. We'd rip Roger Goodell? No. We'd rip Rob Manfred a whole lot, I tell you that much. So it's just the way the NFL is, it puzzles you. Outside of that Ravens-Steelers craziness, I'll give you some of my takeaways from last week. One, I got to start in Tampa Bay. The Chiefs get a 27-24 win. Patrick Mahomes throws for over 400 yards. I'm still concerned the Chiefs don't run the ball enough to win the Super Bowl. Eventually have to run the ball, but Tyreek Hill was crazy good. 13 catches for 269 and 3 touchdowns. Tom Brady did rally in the second half, but 2 interceptions in the third quarter were key. I still don't get why Bruce Arians is making Tom Brady throw the deep ball over and over again. Tom Brady still is good with the deep ball. He's not great at it. And I think that's something they have to fix. There's still a disconnect between Arians and Brady there. I think both of them are at fault in some way. But Kansas City continues to show, at least Pittsburgh and Kansas City, we know, are that top tier in the AFC. That's clear. We talked about that a couple weeks ago. Other games of note, Tennessee dominated Indianapolis. Derrick Henry ran for 178 and 3 touchdowns. Colts were thin on the defensive line. This was an obvious pick. Derrick Henry was going to run all over Indianapolis. So Tennessee now controls their own destiny in the AFC South. I was very surprised by the Raiders losing to Atlanta the way they did. I mean, Vegas was right there. They had that emotional game against the Chiefs where they almost beat Kansas City for the second time. And I guess maybe that was a emotional hangover from that game. We'll see how Vegas responds this week. That was a tough one for them. Tough one for the Rams. I still can't figure out what the Rams are. They lose to San Francisco on a last-second field goal. And the Rams are one of those teams where they can beat anybody and they can lose to anybody. And that's the weirdness of Los Angeles this year. Eagles lose again, and I wonder, Doug Peterson, does he just have a different play sheet than we all do? Down 11 and you elect to go for it instead of kicking the field goal to put yourself down 8 in the fourth quarter, where you'd be down a possession and your defense only allowed 9 points in the second half. At some point, I don't get what Doug Peterson thinks sometimes, and it's easy to blame Carson Wentz. There's an equal amount of blame to go around between Carson Wentz and Doug Peterson. You had Cleveland survive against Jacksonville, but the Browns continue to win. They're now 8-3. And obviously, I got to go with New England a little bit here. And Arizona kind of showed you. I don't know if they're ready for prime time yet. Kenyon Drake did have 2 touchdowns, but you look at that game. Arizona couldn't get a 4th and goal on the 1 in the last play of the first half. They couldn't get a 3rd and 1 where if they pick up the first down, they could probably run out the clock, and Zane Gonzalez is kicking a game-winning field goal, not a field goal to put them ahead, which they missed anyway. You had Cam Newton get a run out of bounds and get a unnecessary roughness penalty on Isaiah Simmons, which leaves New England to go in a field goal range to kick the game-winning kick from Nick Folk, who's actually been really good this year. The Patriots win a game in which Cam Newton throws for under 100 yards. Now, that's not a recipe to win, but we also saw when you take away Kyler Murray's ability to run, and Kyler Murray didn't really run in this football game against New England. He threw the ball 34 times for a 170, no touchdowns. He ran it only 5 times for 31 yards. When Kyler Murray is forced to throw in the pocket, and the Patriots did a good job of pressuring him up the middle with Adam Butler and Winovich on the outside, he's a different quarterback. The Cardinals are good. I'm not saying they're not good. But it takes a lot to take that next step. I don't know if they're there to take that next step yet. You have DeAndre Hopkins, and really New England got, I thought, the wrong end of a couple of calls in that game, like the punt return where they got called for the blindside block. You had a Hopkins-Gilmore situation where both of them got called for pass interference. Meanwhile, if you're both going to get called for pass interference, you shouldn't call anything. Just let it go. And of course you have to talk about Thanksgiving because Mike McCarthy is passing on 4th and inches. They're trying to do a fake punt from their own 20-yard line or own 25-yard line or deep in their own territory. And you gave Washington free points with Antonio Gibson, who was awesome. 115 yards, 3 touchdowns. Washington, to me, we could talk about the Giants all you want. To me, they're the favorite in the NFC East. And I know they got Pittsburgh this week, which I think, by the way, and you'll hear me say this in word association, they're going to win this game Monday night in Pittsburgh. Because I think they're on that right mode right now. Alex Smith doesn't turn the football over. They've got one of the best defenses in football with Chase Young, Ryan Kerrigan. They do a good job getting after the quarterback. And I like the way Ron Rivera is coaching right now. Like, out of the coaches you have, as good as Joe Judge has been for the Giants, you trust Ron Rivera the most. Dallas is still in it, too. You know, if Dallas can beat the Ravens on Tuesday, they've got a shot. The other big news in the NFL this week, Matt Patricia gets fired in Detroit. Not a surprise, because when you are any coach that's come under Bill Belichick that tries to be Bill Belichick wherever they go does not last. Matt Patricia tried to be Bill Belichick, tried to prove he was smarter than Bill Belichick. It didn't work. Josh McDaniels tried it in Denver. Didn't work. Why is Joe Judge at least somewhat succeeding with the Giants to start off with? He's not trying to be Bill. He's trying to be himself. Why did Eric Mangini kind of succeed and not succeed with the Jets? He tried to be Bill. You cannot try to be Bill and win because players see right through that. It's clear. So Matt Patricia's gone. You wonder what's the future of Matt Stafford from Detroit. We had Trevor T last week from Full Press Lines on, and it was fitting we asked him that question because if it's a new regime, it's hard to see Matthew Stafford coming back because the new GM and the new coach are probably going to want to start with their quarterback. And Stafford's going to be a hot commodity if somebody wants to trade for him because there are easily going to be teams that can trade for Stafford and put better talent around him than what's happened in Detroit. Stafford's not a bad quarterback. He's also had injuries the last few weeks around all the guys he could throw the ball to pretty much. So that affects things as well. But the Lions basically got trolled by the Texans. You saw them run a trick play late in the fourth quarter last week when they were already up, I think, like 2 touchdowns. It's like, what are you doing? So Houston kind of ran it up on Detroit in a way. Let's go to week 13, and let me give you my 5 games to watch for this week. A lot of good games on the slate. I'm going to go up number 5. I'm going to go to that Rams-Cardinals game. I think that's a really interesting game because I need to see which team is for real. It's hard to pick this one. Right now the Rams are favored by 3. And I don't know which one between Jared Goff and Kyler Murray is going to have the better game. Obviously, I think that's going to determine who wins this ballgame. And I think which team does the little things will win. Which team picks up those 3rd downs, move the chains that you don't see in the box score. So that's my number 5 game for this week. Number 4, I'm going to go to the game. Let's go to the game in L.A., Patriots to Chargers. And Patriots win this football game. They go to 6-6. You're starting to talk about maybe they got a shot at the playoffs because their last 4 games are the Rams. They're going to stay out in California to play them Thursday. Miami, which you don't know what their quarterback situation is right now with Tua's injury and Fitzpatrick. Buffalo, who they almost beat earlier in the year, and the Jets. There's a path to 9-10 wins for New England. But L.A., with Herbert, they're in every football game. They just don't make the right plays at end of games to win. And Anthony Lynn, obviously in the hot seat, probably going to lose his job, I would think. But this game will be close in the fourth quarter because neither of these teams know how to blow anybody out. So that's my number four game. Number three, I'm going to go to that game in Arizona. Remember, the Niners are not playing in Santa Clara due to COVID protocols. They're taking on the Bills. Niners, I'm trying to figure out what team they are, but they're getting healthier with Deebo Samuel and Mostert and Sherman. They're getting guys back. They don't have Garoppolo or Kittle, but the Niners are only a game out of the playoffs. So if they are in that position, Niners could win this game. And Buffalo, 8-3, they're playing really well. I think kind of under the radar still. So this will be a really fun Monday night football game. So that's number three. My number two game of the week, I am going to go to the Washington-Pittsburgh game. I do believe that's the second best game of the week because, again, I think Washington has the chance to pull off the upset on Monday. I think it's going to be a really close game. And don't discount, even though, again, Pittsburgh just played a physical game off of 5 days rest, not going to play a team that's well-rested. That's a recipe for a really close game. And the number one game of the week for me is in Tennessee. Battle of the 8-3s, the Browns and the Titans. Baker Mayfield against Ryan Tannehill. And Baker Mayfield has not done great, but he's done enough for the Browns. This is a fun matchup between Nick Chubb and Derrick Henry, two of the best running backs in football. The winner of this game, I think, is clearly the number three team in the AFC. And yes, that would mean if the Browns win as well. I know the Browns have struggled against Pittsburgh and struggled against Baltimore. But if Cleveland can win this game, and I think even if they don't win this game, they're going to make the playoffs. Look at their schedule. They play the Giants and Jets week 15 and 16. They're probably going to make the playoffs. But the Browns want to be a serious Super Bowl contender, not just a playoff team. You win this game. But props to Cleveland on actually having a winning record. Never thought I would say that over the last two decades. So coming up next, I'm going to be joined by Nick Swanson. He is the editor of Full Press Browns. We get into more and why Cleveland has been so strong on the run game in the last few weeks. A little bit of a preview to this game, and we'll look ahead to week 13 with some word association. And then coming up later on in the show, we're going to do some college football after the NFL segment, and we're actually going to have a really fun segment for you this week. I had the chance to talk to a really good writer over at the Myrtle Beach Post and Courier. His name is Danny Kelly, and he covers the Coastal Carolina Chanticleers. Now, why are we talking Coastal Carolina on the show? Today at 5:30 on ESPNU, Coastal Carolina, who's number 18 in the college football playoff, takes on BYU, number 13. Coastal Carolina is supposed to play Liberty, but Liberty couldn't play the game due to COVID protocols. BYU stepped in, flew across the country, and they're going to play. So we're going to dive into how good Coastal Carolina's been and give a little bit of a quick preview to this game and talk about how can the Chanticleers, however you say it, shut down Zach Wilson. So we've got a fun interview coming up for that later. So stay tuned. We're going to hear my conversation with Nick Swanson that we recorded on Thursday, previewing the week in the NFL and talking more about the Cleveland Browns. We'll be right back here on Kicking with Keeler on Full Press Radio.
But with Beckham being out this year with the ACL tear, someone has to step up, and it looks like Jarvis Landry is going to be that guy again, and he's finally taking over that role once again.
So you mentioned this defense now getting Myles Garrett back this week, going up against a Titans team that likes to play pretty much the same way the Browns play, other than maybe letting Ryan Tannehill do a little bit more. What do you think is going to be the key matchup to watch in this game?
It's going to be, can the secondary keep up with A.J. Brown? That's the biggest thing. Obviously, I have concerns about the defensive line trying to contain Derrick Henry, but you've got Ogunjobi, Richardson, and Elliott on the inside, Vernon and Myles Garrett coming back on the outside. I think they'll do as best a job as probably a team will this year against Derrick Henry and the Titans. But this Brown secondary has been very bad. It has been painful to watch this year. So I think the biggest key is stopping Tannehill in the passing game. Keep him under pressure. Try and keep A.J. Brown in front of you and just don't let him score.
So let me go back to a little bit what you mentioned on Baker Mayfield. Not his best season. He hasn't had as many turnovers, just 7 picks this season so far in 11 games. So he's been able to at least somewhat take care of the football. They haven't asked him to do too much. So is your opinion soured on Baker Mayfield being the future of this team? Or do you see they put it so much around him, Nick? They improved the offensive line. I thought this was basically make it or break it for Baker. And I don't think he's broken it, but I don't think he's made it either.
I've had a couple people ask me about this. I don't think that you can put all of the blame for Baker's poor performances strictly on him. This is his, what, 3rd head coach in 3 years and 4th OC. It's his first year in the system. I think this is the time to iron out the rough patches. Hopefully there's an improvement next season. I think next season will be the make or break year for Baker Mayfield.
So before we get into word association, let me ask you about basically the ramifications of this game. Both these teams, 8-3, Tennessee obviously leading their division, Cleveland not going to win their division. They're going to be one of those, well, likely one of those 3 wild card teams. We know Pittsburgh and Kansas City are a step above everybody else in the AFC. But is the winner of this game, in your mind, the 3rd best team in the conference?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I think that there is the opportunity there. I'm still really high on the Bills. I know they haven't played great this year, but I do think, personally, I think Kansas City is the best team in the league, without a doubt. That one loss against the Raiders, it was one of Derek Carr's best games of his career. Mm-hmm. The Steelers are legit, though. The Steelers are a legit team, and I really am struggling to see the Browns making the playoffs if they lose not this game, but the following week against the Ravens. I think that the Titans are one of the borderline good or lucky teams. I think they've just been lucky that Derrick Henry this last year and a half has been absolutely incredible, and they've been able to ride that momentum through, and teams still just can't stop him because he's that dude. But I think my hierarchy would be the Chiefs, the Steelers, then I would lean the Bills, and then it would go probably the Browns, but I just need to see more consistency from Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, that's the thing when you look at the Browns is that people say, yeah, they're 8-3, but against Pittsburgh, they didn't play a very competitive game. Against the Ravens, albeit in week 1, was not a very competitive game. Obviously, next week, like you mentioned, will change things. I still think, regardless, the Browns are going to be a playoff team just because they have the Giants and the Jets the following 2 weeks, so that easily gets you to 10. And I think in the AFC, you look at the Browns, they've already beaten Indy. They've already beaten Indy. They didn't beat Vegas, but you would think 10 wins for the Browns should get them in the playoffs.
Yes, I would think so. Like you said, the Jets basically a guaranteed win, even though the Jets gave the Patriots a heart attack a couple weeks ago. Jets probably going to go 0-16 this year. The Giants without Saquon. Daniel Jones has looked all right, but we did see him get hurt last week, so not sure what that situation is. It really comes down to if the Browns can win one of the Titans, Ravens, and Steelers, one of those games, I think they make the playoffs.
And funny you mentioned the Bills, because if the season ended today, the Browns be playing the Bills in the wild card round. I think that would actually be really an intriguing football game. We'll get into the Bills a little bit more when we talk about their week 13 game, but I like the Bills are starting to warm on me a little bit. the way they are playing. So let's get into a little Week 13 word association. For those not familiar with the game, I throw out a game from on the schedule for this week. We go over every game, and Nick and I will give the first word or phrase that pops in our head about each game, kind of like if you went to a psychiatrist or you've seen movies where people go to psychiatrists and they show them an ink blot, and they give them the first word or phrase that pops into your head about the ink blot. We do it for football games. Obviously, Tampa and Carolina are off this week. There are no more buys anymore for the rest of the year, which is always great. So let's start in Atlanta, where the 9-2 Saints taking on the 4-7 Falcons. So, Nick, what do you think here?
Raheem Morris, the interim head coach of the Atlanta Falcons, has turned this team around. And I think the Falcons will upset the Saints this week. The Saints will probably still have Taysom Hill at the helm. But Raheem Morris is coaching out of his mind. He's got a great offense. The defense has been suspect this season. But he has done everything in his power to will this team to wins, and they have won games. So I think that alone, his coaching will be able to lead Atlanta to this upset against the Saints.
Yeah, I'm going to go with my word here being clarity, because they're going to get clarity on both teams here. Maybe we finally get more on Taysom Hill, who, let's be honest, as courageous as Kendall Hinton's efforts were for Denver, the Saints didn't really play anybody last week. It was a joke. And then against the Falcons 2 weeks ago, Taysom Hill didn't really do anything throwing the football. And I'm still not sold that he could actually, you know, win a game with his arm. He was 18 of 23 for 233 2 weeks ago. He had both touchdowns running the football. And Atlanta, outside of that game against New Orleans, really should, when you think about it, be right in that playoff picture. They're going to look back at that last-second loss to Detroit as maybe the reason they're not. And like you said, they're playing well. They blew out Vegas last week. This is going to be a really competitive football game. And if Atlanta wins, it puts themselves right back in the mix. If Arizona were to lose, they would be just a game behind that last playoff spot. So the Falcons still very much with a lot to play for, and give Raheem Morris a lot of credit. Let's go to Chicago, where another interim head coach, Daryl Bevel, coaches for the Lions against the 5-6 Bears. And I hate to do this, Nick, to the Lions all the time. I honestly, folks, I do try to come up with a different game each week, but the Lions and Bears are my flip the channel game of the week. Meaning if this game happens to be on your Sunday ticket or your whatever package you watch, you got to flip right away. Just look for red zone highlights. The Lions are a joke. The Bears are a joke. I don't really know what to think in this game, so I'm just going to avoid it altogether.
I completely agree with you on that. Unfortunately, I do live with a Bears fan, so that will be one of the games that will be on the TV this Sunday. But my word for this game is luck. The Bears' season has been up and down. They have lucked themselves into their first 3 wins of the season, including that week 1 win against the Lions when DeAndre Swift just dropped the ball. That was luck. They went 5-1, then their luck ran out. Lost their last 5 straight. This game is a game of luck. It's which quarterback is going to show up and which receiver is going to, or DB, is going to make the dumb play that opens up the game for the other team.
That probably knows that a game, if Chicago hadn't come back to beat Atlanta week 3, the Falcons could be right in the playoff picture too. So a lot of things could change based off one quarter. This game's just going to be ugly, and you wonder what motivation the Lions will have. Maybe they play inspired for Daryl Bevel because they finally don't have the man with the pencil and the beard as the head coach, but I don't really know what to think here. Let's go to a different game. Let's go to Miami. Dolphins at 7-4. Who knows if Tua plays this week? Is it Ryan Fitzpatrick still? But they play the 2-8-1 Bengals. And my word for this is keep it simple. For the Dolphins, regardless of who's a quarterback, just don't turn the football over. The Bengals are horrible. One of their only touchdowns last week was a kick return against the Giants. And they were only in that game last week because Colt McCoy was in the second half. Brandon Allen, Ryan Finley, I don't really care who the quarterback for the Bengals is. Burrow's out, Mixon's out. This is the game, if you're the Dolphins and you're a contender, you've got to win this game, because after this week, Miami's schedule is brutal down the stretch.
Yes. So this game is a game that I'm very intrigued about. I am a huge Brian Flores guy. I think he is the real deal. I think he should be in the running for Coach of the Year this year because he took a bad Miami team, which is still bad. He has just managed to out-coach his opponents and win games. So that's my biggest thing, is coaching. We saw last week the Bengals had a close one against the Giants. You, like you said, it was because of a kick return touchdown, but it is who will be able to out-coach the other team. That's my biggest thing.
And I love Brian Flores too.
Yeah, I'm talking strategy, not just who's going to get the most out of their players. Who is going to play a smarter game?
And if you go off that coaching tree, it's Flores and the Belichick coaching tree against Zach Taylor and the Sean McVay tree. And Zach Taylor hasn't really done anything. And if you've seen, Flores kind of knows how to dial up blitzes and things with this kind of scheme. It just works way too much for Miami. It's all about for them just being a contender and just not looking down at their competition, which is weird to say about the Dolphins. And they kind of did last week against the Jets. They didn't really blow out the Jets until late second half. Maybe it changes a little bit this week. Let's go to Minnesota, where the Vikings at 5-6 host the 1-10 Jaguars, who keep losing, but as Nick can attest to, they've been competitive over the last 3-4 weeks, being in almost every game. Nick, what do you think here?
My word for this game is job security, because I think that the loser of this game, their head coach, will be gone by the end of the season. Because both of these teams have had disappointing years, especially the Vikings. You expected them to do something, and they started off absolutely terrible. The Jaguars, they're on what, their third starting quarterback now this season? Nothing going on there, really. If this team wants to get back to 2017 when they were in the AFC Championship game, then there needs to be a change at some level.
I think Marone's going to get fired regardless if they win or lose this football game, just because Dave Caldwell has already been fired as the GM. I don't really think that's going to change Marone's status at all. So my word for this is going to be turnovers. The Vikings let the Panthers in it last week because of those two fumbles in a row recovered by Jeremy Chinn. They were still able to rally to get the victory. But you look at what the Jaguars can do. They've been able to move the football. And we've seen it against Pittsburgh even. They've had chances. They just give the ball away too much. Regardless if it's Jake Luton or Mike Glennon or whoever's playing quarterback, they're giving their opponent too many opportunities to score off turnovers. But on the other side, Kirk Cousins, we know, is very capable of turning the football over himself. So if the Vikings can just quite simply give the ball to Dalvin Cook 30 times and just let him run with it, they've got every opportunity to win that football game and win it convincingly. But you have to admire Jacksonville just for their ability. They're not laying down. They're fighting. They're in every game till about the last couple of plays. And I would not be surprised if that trend continued this week. I think they can hang around, but Minnesota is going to win this football game. Let's go to MetLife Stadium. Raiders at 6-5 against the 0-11 Jets. Honestly, Nick, this might have been my upset pick last week, but the Raiders already got blown out and looked ahead. So I'm going to go with bounce back. It's tough for me to see the Raiders losing 2 weeks in a row, especially this game. One thing to note, though, the Jets did win this game 34-3 last year. But Sam Darnold is well beyond what he was last year, in the wrong direction. They've got nothing to play for. Adam Gase had to apologize on Wednesday or on Thursday for how he's developed Sam Darnold, or lack thereof. It's hard for me not seeing John Gruden and the Raiders blow by this game because they looked past their opponent last week and paid for it.
Yeah, my word is also bounce back, because last week we saw the Raiders go in, and you saw right off the bat, I knew as soon as it happened that this was going to be a bad game, because Jonathan Abram picked off Matt Ryan and then did the dirty bird in the end zone. I knew from that moment that this was going to be a blowout, that game wasn't even going to be close. The Raiders were going to look like a junior high school football team playing against an NFL team. And they did. I think it's going to be the complete opposite. I think that we may see another 43-6 game. This time the Raiders will be the ones putting up 43 because the lack of talent that the New York Jets have is astounding. Their defense, you have Quinnen Williams, who has been okay so far in his career. He's barely had any time in the league, but you'd expect more from the third overall pick. I'm looking over on the offense for the Jets to see if Sam Darnold can get it going, because I like the weapons he has. I like Denzel Mims. I like Rashad Perriman. I like Chris Herndon. It's just, can Sam Darnold outplay his coach? I think that is the key for the Jets to win any game at all. They need to play better than what Adam Gase can coach. And I don't think they're going to be able to do that this week.
So let's go to Houston, where the Colts travel to take on the Texans. No Will Fuller for Houston, no Bradley Roby for Houston. And my word for this is undermanned, just because the Texans, they don't have Fuller. They don't have Stills. They don't have Cobb. Is Deshaun Watson going to throw to, like, air in this game? And this is a guy who can turn, like, a no-name wide receiver into something special. So Deshaun Watson alone could keep Houston in this game. But with Houston so undermanned, no David Johnson either at running back, I don't really see how they compete against a really good Colts defense.
My word is intrigued, because this game could go one of two ways. It's down to the wire, single score game, or it's the Colts absolutely look amazing and like legit contenders, and Houston gets booed out of their own stadium.
That's true, because there are fans at that stadium, I believe. So that would make sense, I think.
Yes. I don't know if you know this, but since firing Bill O'Brien, Deshaun Watson has thrown, I believe it is, 19 touchdowns and zero interceptions.
Saw it against New England 2 weeks ago, so yeah, I would believe that.
Yeah. Deshaun Watson has played out of his mind. And we saw it his rookie year, too, before he got hurt. Deshaun Watson, when perfectly healthy, is a top five quarterback in football, and I'm very comfortable saying that. But they really don't have the talent there. You lost DeAndre Hopkins. You don't have David Johnson. Like you said, Will Fuller suspended. Your already bad defense is missing one of their best players. You're going to be throwing to, like, Isaiah Coulter and Kiki Kuti all game. It's not going to be a fun game to watch for Texans fans. But they seem to play Indianapolis pretty close usually. So I'm going to say it's going to be a close game, but the Colts will pull it out.
So the last 1 o'clock game, we'll go to the game, Nick, you're most intrigued by out in Tennessee. Battle of 8-3s, Browns and Titans. We looked at this game a little bit earlier, but give me a word for this and give me a pick. Who do you like to win?
Run game. That's my word. Which team can get the run game going the quickest? Because whoever can establish the run early will win this game. I think it'll be Cleveland, because Tennessee's defensive line isn't all that great. They lost Jarrell Casey, and he was their best defensive player. He was their run stuffer. I'm going with the Browns winning this game.
Yeah, my word for this is contender. Like we talked about earlier, this game could go a long way to being who that third best team in the AFC is, because if the Browns win this game, it's really a game that's going to, I think, put people on notice of how they're playing. They're not going to just look at, oh, they've won all these ugly games. Going on the road to Tennessee and finding a way to win would be a big accomplishment. And for the Titans, they win this game, they're probably going to be the 3 seed in the AFC, because they still have Detroit, they still have Jacksonville, they still have Houston. So Tennessee would be in great position to have that 3 seed, although I don't know if you want the 3 seed if Kansas City's the 2. But nevertheless, you would still put yourself in that great position, and Ryan Tannehill could add another big win, which Tennessee, I think it could come down to special teams, though. Steven Gostkowski has been known to miss some big kicks. We'll see if the Browns and Cody Parkey can make some kicks as well. We all know Cody Parkey's most famous missed kick, but the Browns, I think special teams is a big key, and Cleveland could have the edge there, because Tennessee has struggled in that regard and has lost them games there. So keep an eye on special teams in that football game. Let's go to the 405 window, and let's start in Arizona, where this game could go a long way for playoff positioning or just making the playoffs in total. The Rams at 7-4 at the 6-5 Cardinals. Nick, what do you think here?
My word is wild card, because the winner of this game, I am confident to say, will represent the NFC in one of the wild card games. Because it looks like the Seahawks are starting to pull away in the division. This has been the most fun division to watch by far. But I think it comes down to which quarterback plays better. Two different play styles. Jared Goff, more of a strong arm, throw it down the field, where Kyler's more mobile and able to improvise. I'm going to go with the Cardinals, because even though the Rams have played well the last couple games, you've got Kyler Murray and you've got DeAndre Hopkins. That's really all you need. You put that on the Jets right now, the Jets are going to win 6 games at least. So I think those two will be the X factor for the Cardinals, and I think the Cardinals will win this game and then take second place in the NFC West.
Yeah, I would go with proving ground for this game, because I think both teams have a lot to prove if they're for real at all. The Rams had a big win against Tampa Bay, turned around and lost to San Francisco. Cardinals have had big wins against the Bills, played competitive against Seattle, they went to New England, and really, Kyler Murray didn't do much. And you got to give Bill Belichick a lot of credit for out-scheming Cliff Kingsbury and finding ways to get to Kyler Murray, but Arizona could not make the little plays to win. They had short yardage running situations on a couple of big plays and couldn't get it done. So for Arizona, as explosive as Kyler Murray can be, I think really could just come down to little plays in this game. Who executes the best between Jared Goff and Kyler Murray? Both teams are very explosive offensively, but who makes that small, like, third and short that moves the chains? Who does that play? It doesn't really show up in the box score, but it's just enough to get you over the edge. And I think both these teams might be missing that, at least on a consistent basis. And I think that's what makes this game very intriguing. Both these teams should still make the playoffs, although if Arizona loses and Minnesota wins, it's a tie. And you have to like the way Minnesota's playing more than Arizona. So the Cardinals need this game more, but both teams need to show a little bit more consistency. Let's go to Seattle. Seahawks at 8-3, trying to keep their undefeated home record alive against the NFC East leading Giants. Still weird to say that. I'm going to go with cupcakes. I'm sure Russell Wilson likes to eat cupcakes, and I think the NFL is giving Seattle a couple of cupcakes because they get to play the New York teams back-to-back weeks. No, not the Bills. The teams actually play in New Jersey. The Giants and the Jets at home. Who do the schedule makers get? What did Seattle send them? Because I think other teams might want to know this. This game would be a lot more interesting if Daniel Jones was healthy. Even if he does play, he's not going to be 100%, you don't think. And the Seahawks just have too much talent in the Giants. Giants are playing better. Joe Judge has them competing. I don't think this will be an embarrassment blowout kind of game, but Seattle should pull away in the second half.
Yeah, my word is cakewalk, because I think Russell Wilson will have no problem handling this Giants defense. I think It's Colt McCoy starting for the Giants. I think I would change my word to blowout because love Colt McCoy, big Colt McCoy fan. But he's just not at the point to where he can lead an offense to a win single-handedly. And especially against one of the premier teams in the NFC, this team is expected to compete for a Super Bowl. This team, a quarterback who's currently in the race for MVP. I think the Seahawks handle their business here.
Let's go to Green Bay, where the Packers at 8-3 host the 3-7-1 Eagles. Nick, what do you think here?
Tarmac. Because if the Eagles keep playing like they've been playing, that's where Doug Peterson's going to be fired. He's going to be fired on the tarmac. And this team has been completely torn apart by injuries all year. Killer drops by the receivers. Carson Wentz doing everything he can, and it's still not being good enough. Green Bay team is more talented. Their defense showed out last week, absolutely embarrassed the Bears. And this Green Bay team is legit. This Green Bay team is, I think, my favorite to win the NFC.
Yeah, this one, to me, for Philly, it's cruel creativity. I don't really like what Doug Peterson's trying to do here. Like, you tell me, you report Jalen Hurts is taking first team snaps, and then he plays like two snaps. You're down 11, need to kick a field goal to get within a possession to keep your team in the game, that you go for it. You're down four, an extra point, get you within three, you go for two. Doug Peterson is too creative for his own good, and it actually ruins Carson Wentz to a degree. People blame Wentz a lot. We've talked about it the last few weeks on the show. To me, it's a shared blame. I think Doug Peterson is partially to blame for why Carson Wentz is a mess. Because, yes, Philly hasn't been healthy, but they're not putting him in a position to succeed. So this one should be an easy one for Aaron Rodgers. I don't see how Philly even competes in this game. They don't have any semblance of offense right now whatsoever. Miles Sanders only got 6 carries last week. That's all you need to know. They don't even use their best running back anymore. So the Eagles are creative to a fault, and I think that's why they're going to get blown out in this game. The final 4 o'clock game of the week, Sunday, to L.A. 5-6 Patriots against the 3-8 Chargers, who keep finding ways to lose. And my word for this is fourth quarter. And the reason for that is both these teams don't know how to blow anybody out. So you expect this game to come down to who makes the little plays. Cam Newton did last week, although he threw for under 100 yards. He's got an ab injury this week, so who knows how he'll look. And Justin Herbert has played well, but you also have Bill Belichick against a rookie quarterback. It is a different kind of quarterback than what the Patriots have been playing lately. Herbert's more of a pocket guy. Maybe that helps him a little bit. I like New England in this game, Nick, but I think also the Patriots this year tend to win games they're not supposed to win, and they lose games they're supposed to win. So this game could go either way. I'm going to go with the Patriots because I think Bill Belichick knows how to close out games better than Anthony Lynn. That's really the only reason.
I'm going to go with, what's a good word for this? I'm going to go with escape. Because I feel like the Chargers, I agree with you. The Patriots lose games that they should win and win games that they shouldn't. And this is a game they should win because the Chargers are 3-8 and their 3 wins are against probably the 3 worst teams in the NFL, being the Cincinnati Bengals, the Jacksonville Jaguars, and the New York Jets. So this is a game that I would not be surprised at the Chargers winning at all, because that means the Patriots have been very disappointing this year. Obviously, we weren't expecting a whole lot. But we were expecting Cam to be okay, and he hasn't been that. This game will come down to the very end, and it'll be the Chargers winning on like a last-second field goal.
Interesting. You wonder how Anthony Lynn would mess that up, but again, It's an even pick'em in Vegas. There's a reason for that. Both these teams are just weird. But New England, you look at their schedule. They win here. They stay in LA to play the Rams Thursday. New England at 6-6, they'd be right back in the playoff picture. So a weird football game out in California on Sunday. Let's go to the Sunday night game. 4-7 Broncos. Yes, they have their quarterbacks back against the 10-1 Chiefs. And my word, Nick, for this is why? Why did the NFL not flex this game out? I get we want to watch Patrick Mahomes throw 7,000 touchdowns and light up the scoreboard. We have to watch Denver on Sunday night after the embarrassing effort they had last week with only completed one pass. And I don't really know if Drew Locke can do that much better. I mean, he'll do much better than what happened last week, but this game is not going to be competitive. I don't get NBC, you're allowed to flex stuff out. Flex that out. I don't want to watch this game.
Yeah. My word would be skip. This is probably one of the few games this year that I would comfortably skip and just not watch. Drew Locke has been bad this year. He looked promising last year, and he just hasn't been anything good this year. He's been the best they've had, but that's not saying much. Kansas City will... We saw what Kansas City did last week. We saw what Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill did last week. 203 yards and 2 touchdowns in the first quarter. I think that Patrick Mahomes, this is a bold prediction for me. I think Patrick Mahomes will break the single game passing record this week. And it'll be a 40-point game. So that's probably the only reason to watch it.
The one thing I will say from the Chiefs side of things, maybe this is the game where you start to see them run the ball a little bit more. Patrick Mahomes has thrown the ball over 40 times each of the last 4 weeks, and the Chiefs almost had a tough time closing out a game where they led Tampa by 17. So you're going to win in January. I keep saying this, and maybe the Chiefs are just too good where they don't have to prove this. You eventually have to run the ball. So maybe Hilaire and Le'Veon Bell have some kind of success this week. Last time against Denver, Mahomes only threw it 23 times because the Chiefs had defensive scores, special team scores. That obviously changes the game script. But I want to see the Chiefs at least try to run the football a little bit. They have a number one draft pick or a first-round pick, and he ran it 11 times last week. You got to get Hilaire more involved in this offense because maybe it'll help you win the big ones in the postseason. Let's go to Monday. Yep, there's a doubleheader Monday. 5 o'clock, the 4-7 Washington football team. Against the 11-0 Steelers off that. I won't say it's a game we watch Wednesday. It's just an ugly meeting between two teams. My word for this is upset. I think Washington will beat the Steelers.
The only reason
I'm picking this, there's a reason Pittsburgh's only going to have 5 days to prepare for the 4 days to prepare for this game. Washington has 11. Now, I'm not a math guy, but in terms of resting your body, and the Steelers are coming off a physical football game on Wednesday. Washington's had been off since Thanksgiving. Alex Smith doesn't turn the football over. They have a good running attack with McKissick and Gibson. They do enough in the passing game to at least keep Roethlisberger on that offense on the sideline. No Bud Dupree for Pittsburgh. It just has all the makings of a letdown, and I wouldn't blame the Steelers for losing this game because I think they are more screwed by what the Ravens outbreak was than the Ravens actually are. So this one, I give Pittsburgh a pass, but they did lose it. I just love the way Washington's playing right now, and I think they find a way to steal one.
I was very glad that you said upset, because that was also going to be my word for this game, because I am very high on the potential of this team, and especially that front four that they have. You've got Montez Sweat, Jonathan Allen, Daron Payne, Chase Young. You've got Ryan Kerrigan. You've got Ronald Darby in the secondary. Like, this defense is actually very solid. And the Steelers are going to be tired. They're going to be worn out. They're not going to be fully recovered. And Washington has just been hanging out. They've been preparing for this game. They've had, like you said, they've had 11 days to prepare for this game. And I think they're going to go into Pittsburgh and they will win this game.
To the other Monday night game out in Arizona. Yes, I said there's a Monday night game in Arizona. The Bills at 8-3 against the Niners at 5-6 who can't play in their home stadium due to COVID protocols. This game, I'll go with weird because I don't really know what the Niners are. 1 week they pull off upset wins over the Rams with Mostert back. Another week Nick Mullins plays bad and they lose. So now that you make the Niners travel to a different state, not only to play, but to also practice, maybe the ramifications don't show up this week because they just got there on Thursday, so they haven't had time to really get accustomed to everything, you would think. But this just has the makings of a San Francisco win. But it's very tough to predict what the Niners do, and the Bills at least are taking care of their own business. So this is actually going to be, I think, the better of the two games to watch on Monday.
My word for this is neutral, because neither of these teams play their games regularly in this stadium. The Niners play there twice, or the Niners play there once a year, and Buffalo played there, I believe they played in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
So they've each played there once this year. San Francisco, it's not their home turf. It'll feel like an away game for them. How will they adjust to that? I'm not sure if they will. I think the Bills are a better team. I think they've got a much more explosive offense. The Niners' defense is still hurting from all those injuries and the fact that they traded away DeForest Buckner. I think the Bills will win this game by maybe 10 points.
And finally, Tuesday night football on Fox. The Cowboys at 3-8 at the 6-5 Ravens. Nick, what do you think for this rare Tuesday night football game we're getting?
Excited. I'm excited. Because this game will be crucial for Baltimore heading in to the following week against the Browns. If the Ravens stink it up and then are down on themselves and playing the following week, then that means a playoff appearance for the Browns for the first time in I don't even remember how long. But for the Cowboys, they've got something to prove, because Andy Dalton is your backup quarterback. He's probably starting this game with Dak being out. If you can beat this team, then this is one game you can go back to when negotiating Dak Prescott's contract and say, look what we did without you. Why should we pay you $45 million a year? Especially if the Cowboys turn this season around. If they can go, what are they right now? They're 3-8. If they can go 7-9 after their starting quarterback went down, I think that's a success for the Cowboys. I really do. And I think that Jerry Jones will be able to use that as leverage against Dak Prescott. So I think that's what the Cowboys are playing for. Dalton is playing for that starting job next year, and Cowboys management is looking towards the future.
Yeah, my word for this is McCarthy's last stand. Mike McCarthy got embarrassed on Thanksgiving, made some really dumb coaching moves with fake punts and throwing on 4th and inches. But this is a game if the Cowboys can somehow win, and who knows, Lamar Jackson should be back. We don't know about Mark Andrews or a lot of those Ravens that are on the COVID-19 list right now, how many will actually play. Which, again, the Ravens will have 6 days now after that Tuesday Cowboy game to prep for the Browns on Monday, the following Monday. So tell me again how Baltimore didn't get screwed and Pittsburgh did get screwed and Pittsburgh wasn't on the protocols. But that's a different argument. But Dallas, I think, in this game, if they win, And they have the talent to win. Baltimore keeps playing ugly football. That doesn't blow anybody out. You don't know how Lamar is going to look coming off of not playing in almost 2 weeks. If Dallas wins, again, the NFC East winner is going to get to 6. I don't think any team in the NFC East is getting to 7 wins. You beat Baltimore. You beat Cincinnati the following week. You're at 5. All you got to do is win one of the last 3 to at least get in a tiebreaker scenario with San Francisco, Philly, and the Giants. So if Dallas wins this game, they're still alive. As weird as that is and as bad as that is, Mike McCarthy at least would have him in a good position. That being said, it is Andy Dalton. He's beaten Baltimore before in these kind of weird games. I'm just going to go with sloppy. Sloppy's the word. Whenever we have football not played on Thursday, Sunday, or Monday, it's sloppy. And Dallas will have 12 days, and they might be just more rusty than actually any good. So, yeah, we're going to go with sloppy. Maybe I'm just more perturbed by what I watched on Wednesday, but I'm going with sloppy. So, Nick, before I let you go, tell listeners out there about Full Press Browns, what you're doing over there, and how they can follow you and the site on Twitter.
All right. So I am the managing editor for Full Press Browns, part of the Full Press Coverage Network. I write articles. I do a podcast. I try and get those out as frequently as I can. It's been kind of hectic these last couple weeks, but we have our podcast is on all streaming platforms, Spotify, Apple Music, or iTunes, Stitcher, pretty much every platform. You can go follow us on Twitter at @FPC_Browns for Browns exclusive content. For other sports related content in general, then you can follow at @NSwansonMedia. That's NSwanson Media on Twitter for that. And yeah, that's pretty much all I have to plug.
So be sure to check out Nick's coverage of the game. Browns Titans on Sunday should be the game of the week in the AFC, and we'll go a long way in deciding the playoff picture. Nick, thanks for hopping on. Keep up the great work, and we'll talk again soon. Thanks for the time.
Thank you very much.
Special thanks to Nick Swanson from Full Press Browns for hopping on the show this week. Really good slate of games in the NFL this week. We are in December, so the playoffs right around the corner, so obviously very competitive games as it continues to go on. Let's go to college football. Before we look at this week's games, and I know Ohio State is already playing Michigan State. We talked about Ohio State is down 23 players due to COVID-19. We're going to get to the Ohio State situation in a little bit. I want to talk about a couple of things that happened last week among games that weren't top 25 games. And I want to start with Vanderbilt, who isn't playing today against Georgia due to COVID outbreak within the team. And Vanderbilt was out of specialists. They were out of kickers. So they would have a men's soccer team, and they go bring in the goalie on the women's soccer team who helped Vanderbilt win an SEC championship in Sarah Fuller. Vanderbilt's offense was so bad, she never got a chance to kick a field goal. Derek Mason eventually gets fired this week. But Sarah Fuller took it to kick off. Did like a squib kick kind of thing. First off, for those who think that's a publicity stunt, stop yourselves. Stop yourselves. Because if you don't have a men's soccer team and she's the only option to kick, you get the best option possible. And she's the best option, you go with it. And you guess what? It's great. Who else is watching that game if she's not kicking? I'd want to see her kick a field goal. Because it shows, you know what? Anybody can do anything they set their mind to. So for you to think it's a publicity stunt, I'm sorry, you're dead wrong. And for those criticizing how she kicked, can you kick any better? Can you kick any better under those circumstances? You have to imagine the pressure she's under, being the first woman in the SEC to kick in a game. Like, that's the serious thing right there. So I don't get the criticism she's getting. I know there are people saying like, they were hyping up the kick too much. It wasn't that good. No, we're hyping up the moment, not the kick. Okay? So that I found strange that people react that way, but maybe I shouldn't be surprised. But props to Sarah Fuller. That's a great moment, and she inspired so many people. And how about in the MAC, Buffalo, who's not playing their game today, Jared Patterson on the ground, 36 carries, 409 yards, and 8 touchdowns. He had to run for all those touchdowns because Kent State scored 41. They were right there in that game. And the only thing I had a problem with the Buffalo coach with, Jared Patterson was near the rushing record for touchdowns. He tied Howard Griffith in the rushing yards, and he brings in the backup to run for the last touchdown. I get why, but I wonder if he had an idea of how close Patterson was to the record. Would he have kept him in? But that's still impressive. When you look at Jared Patterson, if he's playing at a Power 5 school, he's got Heisman-type numbers. Yes, he's run for under 1,000 yards, but he's got 16 touchdowns. He had 19 all last season on triple the carries he has now. It's insane. So props to Jared Patterson on his success. Other games in the top 25 I was impressed by because we haven't been here since last week. Notre Dame going into North Carolina and winning with their defense. Ian Book made enough plays to win that game, but the Irish are undefeated. They play Syracuse today. They don't have to play next week. The ACC giving Notre Dame and Clemson both the week off. If Clemson wins tonight at Virginia Tech, it'll be the Irish and the Tigers on December 19th in the ACC championship. A good win for Iowa State over Texas. Brock Purdy rallied them late. Iowa State's now in the top 10 in the college football playoff poll, which I'm confused by. I don't think they're a top 10 team, but they did get a win there. Alabama rolled over Auburn. No surprise. 5 touchdowns for Mac Jones, even though Nick Saban could not coach. But I still wonder, if we're going to put Mac Jones in the Heisman, can we put Devontae Smith there instead? Mac Jones is a good quarterback, but out of his 23 touchdowns, Devontae Smith has 11 of them. And I wonder if will wide receiver ever really get close enough to the Heisman Trophy if the quarterback keeps having the better numbers? The last great case a wide receiver had to the Heisman, I believe, was Larry Fitzgerald at Pitt. I don't think we're going to get there for a while. Same thing with Kyle Pitts at Florida, who's really the main pass catcher for Kyle Trask. The only difference here is that Pitts missed a couple weeks, and Trask was still really good without him. But Pitts is still fantastic. I think any NFL team would want him up in the draft this year. Northwestern, after their good win over Wisconsin, lost to Michigan State, so take Northwestern out of the college football playoff mix. Still could win the Big Ten. Indiana beats Maryland but loses Michael Penix Jr. to an ACL injury. So that's your situation in terms of last week's games. Now, I want to get to this week here. Ohio State's playing Michigan State. Ohio State right now is in danger of not playing enough games to qualify for the Big Ten championship. Michigan had its game against Maryland canceled today due to COVID. If Michigan can't play against Ohio State this week, as of right now, Ohio State would not have enough games to qualify for the Big Ten championship. The easy fix you make there, if you're the Big Ten, is you have Ohio State play Maryland. Now, Rutgers is scheduled to play Maryland, but what you could do, from what I can read on, is you could probably maybe put Rutgers against a team like Nebraska. You can mix the schedule around. We've seen it in the Pac-12. We've seen it in the SEC. We've seen it in different conferences. We're seeing it in this BYU Coastal Carolina thing. It is possible. Because to me, I would have a tough time if Ohio State made the playoff and didn't win the Big Ten. Because then it would prove conference championships are meaningless to me. And maybe it did a few years ago when Penn State won the Big Ten and Ohio State got in the playoff instead. So that also, I think, could be an issue for the committee. Do you keep wanting to send that message that playing for a conference championship, they view it as just a tiebreaker? I really think it should be an end-all, be-all. Where I made the case this year, I thought it should be the conference champions and a couple at-larges that made the playoff. We should expand to 8 this year. And to me, when you look at Ohio State, am I really impressed when they beat Nebraska, Rutgers, who's improved, but they struggle with Indiana in terms of defending the pass. I mean, Ohio State has been good. I don't think they've been great. And I think that's the committee's going to have, I think, a tough time. Ohio State's only going to play 5 games. Now, even if they don't play in the Big Ten championship, they will play in a game on the 19th. Everybody is in the Big Ten. So Ohio State could still play Wisconsin, could still play Iowa, who's playing better. But has Ohio State done enough in a Big Ten that's been down this year? I'm not sure. That'll be an interesting one to watch in that regard. You got Florida playing Tennessee today. rivalry game, but Florida should roll. Indiana, Wisconsin's a fun game. We'll see what Tuttle does. Jack Tuttle, a quarterback for the Hoosiers. That game at 3:30. Clemson needs to beat Virginia Tech tonight to get in the ACC championship. They should. Clemson rolled last week. I don't see how they don't this week. Alabama, about a 30-point favorite or close to a 30-point favorite against LSU. They should roll tonight in Tiger Stadium. But I have another problem with the committee, and we keep going back to this problem. BYU, again, didn't play a game last week. I mean, we ranted on this last week, so I won't rant on that much this week. BYU was 14th in the playoff. They move up one spot to 13. Barely ahead of a Northwestern team that dropped six spots after a loss to Michigan State. Iowa State moved up to 9th. Let me put this in perspective. Iowa State lost to Louisiana in the Sun Belt Conference earlier this year. Now, Louisiana is a top 25 team, top 20 team in the AP. But tell me the disconnect, and we touched on this in my interview here in a little bit, that BYU is 8th in the AP poll, yet 13th in the playoff. There's something missing, and I know you could say it's schedule. It's playing Boise State when Boise State didn't really have a lot of their key players. But winning 52-17 is a statement where, to me, it doesn't matter how many key players you have in that instance. So I don't get it. But so if BYU goes into Conway Stadium, goes into Conway, South Carolina tonight, beats Coastal Carolina, you hope BYU gives, the committee gives BYU credit for a top 20 win and gets them close to a New Year's Six. And if you're Coastal Carolina, if you win this game tonight and you beat Louisiana a second time in the Sun Belt Championship, you should be in a New Year's Six. I don't know if you should be in a playoff, but I would easily make the case for Coastal Carolina. They've got a good quarterback in Grayson McCall who we're going to get into. That's going to be a fun game tonight. Again, 5:30 on ESPNU. The Pac-12, probably done. USC only has played three games. Washington has played three games. Oregon lost to Oregon State, which hurt their chances. Pac-12 is probably done. Big 12 has a chance because if Iowa State's all the way up 9, Oklahoma's at 11, they're not out. And those two teams will play in the Big 12 championship in all likelihood. Iowa State could get two wins over Oklahoma. That would say something. I don't know if they get into the playoff. They need chaos, but they're still right there. The A&M Florida debate will still be there. And Cincinnati has Tulsa the next couple weeks. Will the Bearcats have enough on their resume if stuff happens around them to get into the playoff? I'm pessimistic, but I hope Cincinnati actually has a chance. Because I want to see if a group of five can actually compete and beat a Power Five. I want them to make that statement. Because I think in this weird year, I should reward teams for playing games, not penalizing teams when their schedule is not great because they had to add games. I feel that's weird. You're almost, I mean, in Ohio State's case, they had to deal with a COVID outbreak, but they might only play six games. Who's to say, like as Reese Davis has pointed out, in past years, Ohio State has struggled in the second half of the season. But we're only playing one half of the year, so a lot of things can change. So coming up next, you'll hear my conversation with Danny Kelly. He covers the Coastal Carolina Chanticleers for the Myrtle Beach Post and Courier. We're getting into all the craziness that happened where they were supposed to play Liberty, then Liberty had a COVID outbreak, and now they're playing BYU. We'll preview that game today, and you get to know a little bit more about Coastal Carolina on this show. So stay tuned for that interview. We'll be right back with that here on Kickin' with Keeler on Full Press Radio. Well, there's a big game in college football this week. No, it's not Alabama LSU. No, it's not Florida Tennessee. It's BYU Coastal Carolina. College game day at Coastal Carolina this week. And to join us to learn more about the Chanticleers and look ahead to this matchup that, well, just happened Thursday morning. He covers the Coastal Carolina Chanticleers for the Myrtle Beach, the Post, and Courier. Please welcome Danny Kelly to the show. Danny, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing really good. So, of course, I know it's been a whirlwind for you over the last 48 hours. Coastal Carolina was supposed to play Liberty. College game day is going to be at Coastal Carolina this week. So just talk to me a little bit about the enthusiasm for this game that wasn't really a game about 24 hours ago, and what's the vibe around the community over this matchup?
Everybody's super excited. I mean, obviously it was kind of crazy, you know, like yesterday we found out that Liberty, you know, had COVID cases and stuff. So we were just wondering what was going to happen. And then last night there were, you know, rumors floating around that potentially BYU was on the table. And then this morning the news broke and they are playing BYU, which I'm super excited about. I mean, Liberty would have been a good game too, but I mean, when you have BYU coming in 9-0 undefeated, I mean, they're They're definitely a great team. So is Coastal. So I'm looking forward to, you know, covering a game of undefeated teams for sure.
Were you surprised that Coastal Carolina was able to get BYU to come to play a game this quick? I know BYU had been prepping all week in preparation for a game, but what really went into this matchup that Coastal Carolina was able to schedule this so quickly?
Well, from my understanding, once they started hearing rumblings of Liberty potentially not being able to play, they had BYU. They were in talks with them. They were, you know, able to schedule this matchup, you know, at the last minute, just considering that BYU didn't have a game this week, and then BYU is also a pretty, you know, formidable program. It just kind of like it kind of came together as it was. I mean, just since BYU was one of the few teams this week that was idle, that ended up being a good replacement for this game. It's unfortunate because Liberty and Coastal go way back to when they were both in the Big South, and that was a huge rivalry. I mean, this all-time series is tied at 7, so this would have been like kind of like the, you know, tiebreaker of sorts. But yeah, I'm happy that BYU is able to come. I know it's a long trip on such a short notice for them, so I know both teams are definitely, you know, scrambling to figure out what's going on. I mean, Coach Chadwell said earlier that he, you know, it was going to be tough to prepare for, you know, such a stout team coming in at this such short notice. But I mean, it's everybody all around is excited, especially with game day coming. I mean, it would have been really disappointing if Coastal Carolina couldn't have a game at all when, you know, first time ever in school history and in Sunbelt history that game day is coming to a Sunbelt school. So I mean, it's been crazy. Obviously, it won't be the same without fans there, but it's still, I mean, I'll definitely take it, that's for sure.
And it did help BYU a little bit. Moving the start time back was supposed to be, I believe, a 2:30 kickoff, and now it's a 5:30 kickoff. So, yes, it's 3 hours. I don't know how much it means, but it at least gives BYU more time to get ready for the game in a sense.
Yeah, exactly. Coach Chabot was actually saying, he was like, I think I'd rather play at noon just because it'd be like 10 o'clock their time. I think BYU's on Mountain Time. But, yeah, so the kickoff time change definitely helps a little bit. For BYU and I guess Coastal as well, because you know, any time you can have to prepare for a game that happened this quickly is going to be a good thing. But I'm still a little surprised that it's on ESPNU and not, you know, ESPN or ABC or something like that, because it is one of the best matchups of the day. So I'm wondering if that time could change even more. I wouldn't be shocked if they moved Clemson Virginia Tech out of the 7:30 spot on ABC and move that game in, but who knows? I mean, it is Clemson, so that could stay. But I just really think that this game deserves to be on ESPN over
We got to get that petition started. We need Kirk Herbstreit to stay in Coastal Carolina after doing game day and get Fowler down there. And because this is the biggest game of the week. I mean, no disrespect to Clemson and playing for a spot in the ACC title. This is the game of the week, and the national audience needs to know about the Chanticleers, and that's why I have you on. So before we get into the specifics on this team, Danny, how shocked are you that this team is undefeated and in the top 20 in the college football playoff poll?
Honestly, at the beginning of the season, if you had told me that this was going to be the case, I probably wouldn't have believed you. I mean, it was my first year covering this team, so I got kind of lucky. But they were projected to finish dead last in their division in the Sun Belt. I mean, nobody gave them a chance at all. And then, I mean, they've never even made a bowl game since joining the FBS in 2017. So, I mean, for them to come off a 5-7 season to now be 9-0 and, you know, number 14 in the AP and coaches polls, I mean, that's pretty crazy. Also, number 18 in the college football playoff poll, which obviously the first time they've ever been ranked in that as well. So, I mean, it's been a whirlwind of a season. I just never expected it. I mean, they just recently beat App State, who was, you know, their conference rival for a few years now. They've been kind of the king of the hill in the Sun Belt, and they, you know, dethroned them. So, I mean, it's just it's been crazy and it's been a joy to cover.
I was thinking about this for the Sun Belt as a whole. Remember, Arkansas State beat Kansas State, Louisiana, the Raging Cajuns beat Iowa State early in the year, which somehow Iowa State is ranked higher than BYU. I still find that hard to believe, but nevertheless, they are. How big is it for the Sun Belt that now not only they have those two wins, but a chance to maybe for Coastal to not only beat a top 15 team in BYU, which is severely underranked in my opinion, and then potentially beat a ranked Louisiana team again for the second time, Coastal could really jump into that New Year's Six consideration if they run the table.
Oh, yeah, no, that would definitely be huge if they can beat BYU. I mean, yeah, they already have great wins on their resume over Louisiana and App State. But, yeah, if they can beat BYU and then beat Louisiana again, I mean, that would be huge. Yeah, it was kind of crazy. That first weekend of college football, well, second really, but the first weekend a lot of teams were playing when, you know, you had the Sun Belt kind of, you know, dethroning the Big 12 in a sense with, you know, like you said, Iowa State losing and Kansas State losing as well. And then you have Coastal that goes and beats, you know, obviously Kansas is not – this is Kansas football, not Kansas basketball, but, I mean, it's beating Kansas was, you know, kind of a big deal for the Chanticleers for sure. But yeah, so that was cool to see, you know, the Sun Belt getting some recognition, and then it's just kind of, you know, snowballed to what it is now. It's you know, the Sun Belt's definitely a group of five conference to be reckoned with. They have some pretty powerful teams in there.
So all the talk in this game at the quarterback position is most of the time going to be around Zach Wilson, how great he's been for BYU. But tell our listeners about Grayson McCall, who very quietly, 20 touchdowns, one interception, completes about 67% of his passes. How good is he in your mind?
He is phenomenal. I mean, he honestly, like, he kind of came out of nowhere, really. I mean, I know, like I said, I didn't cover the team last year, but I know from, you know, looking back that they, you know, were kind of starting Fred Payton and Bryce Carpenter, like, you know, switching between the two of them. So I kind of thought once again, there'd be, you know, kind of a trade-off between them in snaps. But then, I mean, Grayson McCall comes out of nowhere, really, and just he's been playing really well. I mean, he's a really accurate passer. He can also scramble. I mean, he had a 62-yard touchdown against App State, and their defense is no slouch. So, I mean, it's just he's a phenomenal player.
And if you look at McCall's weapons, this is a team that, yeah, they have a guy in T.J. Marable who has over 100 carries, and Javon Hilly has 41 catches. But looking at their numbers, Danny, it looks like it's a team that you have to prepare for multiple guys to beat you. They don't really have that one guy that you can center on, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, C.J. Marable, who you just mentioned, I mean, he's definitely a force to be reckoned with. I mean, he had three touchdowns. This is actually the first time he had three rushing touchdowns in a game against Texas State on Saturday, so that was great for him. But normally he can either, you know, he can run it in, he catches a lot of touchdown passes. And then, like you said, Javon Hiley, he's been incredible. And then Isaiah Likely, I mean, he could be an NFL player at one point. I mean, he's you know, quite a large target. He had, I think it was a 75-yard touchdown reception, like the first play from scrimmage for the Shawnees last week. So, or not last week, against App State. So, I mean, yeah, Grayson McCall has got, you know, plenty of decent talent. I mean, Reese White in the backfield and Shamari Jones, both of them, they definitely are great compliments to Marable whenever he needs a rest. I mean, they can definitely rely on the two of them as well. They also score a lot and, you know, put in some pretty decent yards as well.
So looking at it from this matchup from a defense perspective, obviously it's a little bit different from preparing for Malik Willis to Zach Wilson, but they're both mobile quarterbacks. How do you expect the defensive approach to be in this game against a guy that can beat you not only with his arm but with his legs as well?
Well, they're definitely going to have to line up on the defensive front with Teron Jackson and CJ Brewer and all them. I mean, Teron's been phenomenal. I believe he had 2.5 sacks against Texas State last week. I mean, he's on every possible watch list you can think of. He's won Sun Belt Defensive Player of the Week multiple times. I mean, it's incredible. I think he was on the preseason watch list with like the Bronco Nagurski Award, things like that. So I mean, he's definitely deserving of all those accolades. CJ Brewer, again, he's kind of like the vocal leader on the defense. He's been there a long time. He's also had a few good games. Like 2 weeks ago, he had like 1.5 sacks, 14 tackles, a season high for him against App State, or actually career high against App State for him. Also just like Jordan Strong has 5 interceptions on the season. Which is tied first in the FBS. He had 2 against App State. I mean, he's a phenomenal player as well. So, I mean, they're definitely talented. Obviously, this is a team that they haven't seen yet, just because, you know, BYU is just stacked on all cylinders. But I really do think they have a decent shot at this game.
Now, you wrote a really good feature for the Myrtle Beach Post and Courier about their head coach, Danny Chadwell. And there's a big job in Carolina that Chadwell, I'm sure, would be looked in for potentially down the line. But how would you describe Coach Chadwell from interacting with him on a daily basis for our listeners?
Like you said, I really do think he would be a good fit there. Obviously, opening just came up in Vanderbilt as well, and he's from Tennessee, so I mean, I'm sure he might interview for that one as well. He's very well deserving of all the attention he's getting. He's like a really, you know, really personable guy. He's just a very, you know, he tells you like it is, and just he's a lot of fun to interview in press conferences and stuff like that, just because, you know, some coaches will give you, you know, kind of vanilla answers like Bill Belichick or somebody like that, but Chadwell will give you more than enough stuff to use in your stories and all that. So yeah, I really enjoyed dealing with Coach Chadwell this year. It's been a lot of fun.
So looking at this matchup, I know you haven't had that much time to look into it. It's happened so quickly. What do you think is the X factor for you in this game?
For Coastal Carolina?
Yeah.
So I really do think it all comes down to Grayson McCall. And I also think another thing that's going to be a big deal in this game is Coastal Carolina's offensive line is a little bit like traditionally undersized. So, and then meanwhile, BYU has, you know, a pretty huge defense. So I think if the line can hold their own and, you know, give Grayson time in the pocket, or, you know, open up lanes for Marable or Reese White or Shamari Jones, and then also if Likely and Hiley can, you know, also have a good game, I think they do have a good shot. Obviously, like I said earlier, this is a team they have seen before this season. I mean, not saying that App State and Lafayette are not, you know, good opponents, but this BYU is definitely one of the best teams that Coastal will play in its FBS history. So,
and quite simply, I think, Danny, look at this matchup. I mean, when you have two quarterbacks that combined only have three interceptions, it really just comes down to which team. It's probably simple in football terms, but just whichever team doesn't make the most mistakes is going to win this football game, you would think.
Yeah, absolutely. They've been, you know, they haven't turned the ball over quite as much as some of the other teams in the Sun Belt. I mean, they have had a few fumbles recently, but they've been able to recover from those. However, when you're playing Texas State and you fumble, it's a lot easier to recover than if you're playing BYU and you fumble. So, I mean, they definitely have to limit turnovers in this game. But, yeah, like you said, McCall only has one interception. His decision-making skills are really good. I mean, he doesn't force anything. So, I mean, there might be a couple turnovers in the game just because BYU's defense is that good. But I think if they can limit turnovers and then, you'll get a turnover or two of their own, which they're definitely capable of doing, with, you know, Teron Jackson and CJ Brewer and Jeffrey Gunter and players like that, you know, on the line. I mean, I think they have a great shot.
Before I get into what this game could mean with a win, I want to kind of ask you a question because we've seen this in college football a lot this year. I watched Coastal Carolina a few weeks ago. Correct me if I'm wrong. They do allow fans, right?
Yes, they're allowed to have up to 5,000 fans in the stadium.
What have you made of that? And how have you seen social distancing work and things like that? Because like watching some games on TV, like these big schools where they got 100,000 people still, and it doesn't even feel like COVID exists when you watch these games. What has that atmosphere been like for you covering these games?
I mean, the stadium does get loud at times. I mean, obviously it's not as loud as it would be, but I mean, the fans definitely still do come out. I think the capacity of that stadium is like 20,000. So they definitely, for most of the games, they have, you know, at least had, you know, 3,000, 4,000 and 5,000 for some of the bigger games like App State. But yeah, no, this game is already sold out. So the atmosphere there on Saturday is definitely going to be crazy. The athletic director said earlier, Matt Hogue, he said that they might actually have an overflow for fans that, you know, want to be like, you know, not at the game, but, you know, in the environment. They now have an overflow at the baseball stadium and have like a big screen where they can watch the game. So, I mean, this game definitely has a big draw, and I definitely expect it to be pretty packed for, you know, by COVID standards.
So if Coastal Carolina were to win this game, how do you think their chances would stack up in a New Year's Six Bowl? We don't obviously know the opponent, but can this team beat a Power 5 school? Because I would not want to see either one of these schools win and then have to play Cincinnati in a New Year's Six, because then we'll never really figure out, can a group of five actually beat a Power 5?
I think they can. I mean, obviously, if they play a team like Alabama, I don't know about that. But, I mean, if they play, you know, say, like, I don't know, maybe like a Florida – or Texas A&M. I think they could hang with a team like that. But yeah, it's just, they haven't really, I mean, they have proven themselves, but they haven't, you know, this is a game that they can really prove themselves, and whoever comes out of this is definitely in the conversation, I think, for potentially getting a New Year's Six bowl. I mean, Liberty would have been a good game to definitely put them in that conversation, but BYU is even, like, if they can get past BYU, I mean, they definitely, I feel like if they beat BYU, then beat Troy the week after that, and then beat Lafayette in a game that they are hosting for the Sun Belt Championship, I really do think that they deserve a New Year's Six bowl.
And it's a big game for BYU too, because honestly, Danny, I watch these playoff shows and I get really angry that BYU gets shortchanged by the committee all the time, where they say, yeah, their schedule's not good. How hard is it for independent schools to schedule 10, 11 games in a pandemic, and they shortchange a Boise State game that, yes, they were maybe not at full strength, they still scored 50 on the road. Like, what? I always wonder what BYU or small school has to do. The committee should just say, you know what? We don't think a group of five belongs in the playoffs. I don't like when they make these excuses when these schools don't get the opportunities when teams don't want to schedule them unless they have to go on the road and play them.
Yeah, it's definitely like an age old debate, just because, you know, obviously they want the big name schools in there. But yeah, also it's like, especially with COVID, I mean, like, Coastal Carolina was supposed to play South Carolina, who's obviously not that good this year, but if they had gone into Columbia and beaten South Carolina, I mean, they definitely would have gotten, you know, a lot of attention, like, as a still a Power 5 win, you know, albeit not a great one. But, yeah, it's just – it is hard because, you know, if you're like if you're independent like BYU, I mean, then you make your own schedule. But then with COVID going on, it's like you're lucky to even be able to play, really. So it's like – it's also hard because teams don't play the same – like, they're only going to play their own conference – mostly, and then also they don't play the same amount of games either, so it really is hard to gauge, like, who's deserving and who isn't. I mean, by the end of the season, I guess if you win your conference championship, especially if you're a Power 5, then you have a good shot. But also, I mean, if you have a good, you know, a good non-conference, you know, schedule, and then also you go undefeated in your group of five conference, I mean, I really do think you're deserving of a shot. And then, like, I think BYU definitely got shortchanged. I believe they're, what, number 13 in the college football playoff and number 8 in the AP poll. So it's like there's kind of a stark contrast there. But, yeah, the same thing happened with Coastal, though. I mean, when the first college football playoff poll came out, they were only number 20. Meanwhile, they were like number 15 or 16 in the AP poll. So it's definitely – I've noticed a trend of whatever a team is ranked that's in a group of five, if they're whatever they're ranked in the AP or coaches poll, and they're usually going to be lower in the college football playoff poll. I guess that just comes down to their criteria as much like – you know, harder to cope with, or just, I don't know. It's, yeah, it, like you said, it is difficult for a group of five team to, or an independent, like BYU, or even Liberty to get into the conversation.
Yeah, Liberty was right there too. Really, they're a blocked field goal away from being undefeated. So Liberty would be right in that conversation as well. Last one for you, Danny. Coastal Carolina obviously knows already who they're going to play in a couple weeks in the Sun Belt Championship. They can't look ahead, but we can. Against the Raging Cajuns of Louisiana Lafayette, they had the last second field goal back in, I think it was late September, 30-27. What do you make of this Sun Belt Championship, and do you see it playing out the same way as the first time? Maybe not necessarily a Chanticleers win by that margin, but a similar close game possibly.
I definitely think it could be a close game. I think Coastal has gotten better over the last few weeks. So, but also, I mean, Lafayette's also doing pretty well. So that's Lafayette's only loss of the season. So I do think it could be a close game. Will it come down to a last second field goal and be as dramatic as it was the last time? I don't know about that, but you never know. I do think it's going to be a close game. If I had to pick, I would say Coastal probably wins the game since they are hosting as well. So that definitely helps. But I mean, yeah, I think it'll be a close game.
So, Danny, tell listeners out there how they can follow your coverage of the Chanticleers and how they can follow you on Twitter, and anything you'd want to plug, feel free to do so.
So my Twitter is @_Danny_Kelly. And also you can get updates as well at when you follow at PC Myrtle Beach. And I can be reached by email at dkelly@postandcourier.com.
So let me ask you this real quick. How many tweets do you get people asking you what a Chanticleer is? Has that ever happened to you?
I actually haven't, but there have been cases of I know a lot of the people that work in Coastal Carolina media, they get, you know, they get people like mispronounce the name or they don't know what it is. Like they've even had something, I think it was like with Pat McAfee where he said the name wrong, called like the Chandeliers or something like that. Like that's what it sounded like he said. And then, you know, they kind of, you know, poke fun at that. But yeah, no, they do. I've noticed a lot of people in their media department do have questions about that.
Yeah, so follow Dady's coverage of this really the biggest game in Coastal Carolina history. They've got a top five logo, and now they've got the best matchup in December. Not much more you can ask for heading into this great game between BYU and Coastal Carolina. Danny, thanks for hopping on. Keep up the great work. Enjoy the game Saturday, and thanks for the time.
All right, I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me. Anytime you want to know about Coastal, just let me know.
You got it. Special thanks to Danny Kelly from the Myrtle Beach Post and Courier for hopping on the show. It's always good to learn about these group of five schools because I like to give them the attention on the show, and I want you, the listener, to learn more about them. So I'm glad Danny hopped on to give us that update. I want to remind you, of course, you can follow us on Twitter at Full Press Radio, at FP underscore coverage. Follow me on Twitter at RickNader555. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Please give it a rating. I hope it's 5 stars. I want to hear from you. Tell me what you like. Tell me what you don't like. You can email me, rickjkeeler@gmail.com. Be sure to download the Full Press Coverage app on your iOS or Android device. All of our articles, podcasts, everything is there. And if you see something that we don't have and you want to contribute, go to fullpresscoverage.com/contribute and be a part of our team today. You can also hear our live radio lineup every weekday, FBC Radio Live, Ian Glenn's and Mike Debate, Snowman in the Morning, College Credit Hour, and Dylan and Ross Save Sports. That's your lineup during the week. You can check anytime on the app as well. Some rough news today. Today at 1 o'clock was supposed to be Gonzaga against Baylor, a top two matchup, 1-2 in college basketball in Indianapolis on CBS. That game canceled due to COVID-19. That's just where it's going in sports this year. And both teams were impressive. Gonzaga played in the Jimmy D Classic against West Virginia. Jalen Suggs got banged up during the game, came back, rallied, helped Gonzaga beat West Virginia in that one. Baylor was very good against Illinois, who's a top 10 team. So I thought that was a really fun moment. You've had some good games this week in college basketball. Kentucky losing to Richmond. You had Michigan State beating Duke. Duke losing at Cameron. You rarely see that, but Cameron had no fans. It's kind of like the equalizer in a way. But the Gonzaga, I thought, has shown they've been the best team so far, beating Kansas and then beating West Virginia. So far, Gonzaga, I think, has had the best wins, and Jalen Suggs has been fantastic. Now, I want to look at the NBA for a little bit. Schedule came out. I think there's a good slate of Christmas games for sure. You got Pelicans against Heat, Warriors, Bucks, a little Steph versus Giannis, Brooklyn against Boston, Kyrie Irving returns to Boston, probably no fans there. You have the Mavericks against the defending champion Lakers, who just gave Anthony Davis a new contract extension, gave him a max deal, so Anthony Davis will be there for the foreseeable future. And the Clippers and Nuggets at 10:30. So a really good slate of NBA games on Christmas. You do have a football game, I think, on Christmas too, the Vikings and the Saints. So NBA always rules Christmas, so it's no surprise there. But you had something happen on Friday. The Nets had their media week, and Kyrie Irving, you would think you'd hear from him, right? Well, you heard from him in a written statement. Instead of speaking to the media today, I'm issuing this statement to ensure my message is properly conveyed. I am committed to show up to work every day, ready to have fun, compete, perform, win championships alongside my teammates and colleagues in the Nets organization. And then he said this. COVID-19 has impacted us all in many ways, so I pray for the safety and health of our communities domestically and abroad. I am truly excited for the season to start, and I'm also praying that everyone remains safe and healthy throughout this journey. My goal this season is to let my work on and off the court speak for itself. Life hit differently this year and requires me to move differently. So this is the beginning of that change. Kyrie Irving marches to the beat of his own drum. And you wonder what might happen in Brooklyn. First-year head coach in Steve Nash. He's got good assistants around him, but it's still a first-year head coach. You know Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant essentially run the Nets. That's clear. is Kyrie going to now not speak to the media the rest of the season? I mean, he has to by rule. Or is he going to put all the bulk of the media on Kevin Durant? Who, you know, Kevin Durant doesn't get along with the media at times. To me, this is a low blow by Kyrie. Because what's the harm of you speaking to the media and saying that? And taking questions. Yes, I get it. We all hate the media. The media is terrible. They skew information. I get, you know what? I could see sometimes. But look, that's your job. That's your job. You have to be able to speak to the media because that's your outlet to fans. That's how people get these stories where fans can relate to you. And you wonder, what's happened to Kyrie since he left Cleveland? He basically got him, is seen by a lot of people as what ruined the Celtics. Does he want to be seen as someone that ruins the Nets too? Does he want to take away a lot of what he did in Cleveland, making that shot to win Cleveland's only NBA championship? That moment's never going to go away. But is that the end of the, oh yeah, Kyrie Irving, that really good player that wrecked two franchises? I don't think Kyrie wants to go down that route. But like I said, Kyrie thinks his own way. We remember the flat earth stuff. You never know what he's thinking. And for a team like the Nets, it's trying to figure out, okay, how do we gel to win? Because the Nets at times last year gelled better without Kyrie Irving. And you know what would happen if Kyrie Irving's name leaked in a James Harden trade room. And right now James Harden's staying in Houston for the foreseeable future. But if that ever happened again, you know Kyrie wouldn't be happy with it. He'd want to make, he would make, I think, a point to stay and not get traded. So there's issues in Brooklyn. There's more issues than you're thinking. They're going to be on national TV a lot. They opened the year with the first game at home against Golden State, which the NBA doing these games cross-country, a little bit odd. We saw baseball go to the regional approach, and you know with NBA, there are going to be COVID cases. Do you want to risk teams traveling across the country to play these games? Now, you have a case, all 30 NBA teams, this new schedule, remember the first half only released, will play 37 or 38 games, about 17 to 20 home games. And the NBA also, this is from the ESPN article by Tim Bontemps on the schedule. The teams are also playing more consecutive road games against teams in the same general geographic area than the past. The league says there are about half as many instances of teams making single-game road trips. So there are at least improvements there, but I wonder, why does Brooklyn have to play Golden State? And why does Golden State, to begin the year, have to go to Brooklyn and Milwaukee? Like, look at Golden's, like, Golden State's gonna have to figure out a lot, especially now without Klay Thompson, right? Look at their schedule to begin the season. Not an easy one. At Brooklyn, at Milwaukee. I'm pulling up for you right now here. Then at Chicago, at Detroit. Golden State isn't home until January 1st. Now, they have a seven-game homestand after that. So it does get better, but you have these weird home-road things. Well, the Knicks are on the road a lot. So obviously these games will figure itself out, but there's still some really good games in the NBA. The trade I was referring to earlier, Russell Westbrook for John Wall, and the Wizards sending a 2023 protected first-round pick to the Rockets. I think it will work out for both teams. Russell Westbrook now gets to play under his old Thunder coach, Scott Brooks. I think he's going to play well with Bradley Beal, and the Wizards, with their talent, could be a playoff team in the East, which isn't hard to do already, but puts you in that position. And for John Wall, it's a fresh start, and James Harden wants to play with John Wall. He gets to play with DeMarcus Cousins, who he played with in college at Kentucky. If John Wall is healthy, there might still be something there, and you might get the most out of John Wall in that situation. So both teams trade lofty contracts, evens itself out, and both players get a fresh start somewhere else. Russell Westbrook, I'm sure, is going to want to prove why he's still a good teammate and try to squash the noise that nobody wants to play with him. So that was an interesting trade, I thought, this week. You had in hockey right now, January 1st is probably not going to happen, and we'll see if they get back in mid-January and how they go about the schedule. Maybe it's only 50 games, so that'll be something to keep an eye on. Baseball news, couple of big baseball news items. You had the non-tender deadline this past week where teams had decided if they didn't want to tender a contract, and some big surprises. Eddie Rosario on the Twins is a really good outfielder. Kyle Schwarber for the Cubs. There are many names. Now, that Gary Sanchez stayed with the Yankees, that wasn't a shock. Chris Bryant stays with the Cubs, that's not a shock. But there are a lot of good names that were non-tendered that are going to be free agents, and this is going to be a slow winter in baseball. Because a lot of teams don't have money. We've seen some good deals happen already, though. I didn't get a chance to talk about it last week, but Charlie Morton signing a one-year deal with the Braves. They've already got Drew Smyly, and the Braves have added veteran help to a young rotation. Atlanta was one win away from making it to the World Series last year, and now they're going to get Mike Soroka back at some point. You add Charlie Morton to that mix. Max Fried emerged and broke out last season. We saw what Bryce Wilson did in the playoffs. We saw what Ian Anderson did in the playoffs. The Braves are bringing in more veteran depth, so that's a really good move for Atlanta. Charlie Morton stays close to home. I liked what the Mets did. With Steve Cohen's first move as owner, and the Mets don't have a GM yet, but they added Trevor May on a two-year $15.5 million contract, $15 million contract. And May is not a closer for the Mets, but they added another good bullpen arm that can be used in multiple innings and can help their team be successful. Maybe they go out and get James McCann at catcher instead of JT Realmuto, and that will free up more money to either spend on Trevor Bauer or George Springer. Because you would think the Mets are going to get one of these big free agents. Because Steve Cohen's got money. A lot of teams don't. So a good job by the Mets to start off with. There was also a big injury news with the Yankees on Friday. Gio Urshela had a surgery to move a bone chip in his right elbow, so he'll miss it 3 months. But right now, he would be back probably in March for spring training. Right now, opening day is April 1st, but right now, that's up in the air because you don't know what baseball is going to decide. We don't even know yet, and this is the problem with baseball. We don't even know if there's a DH yet, and that also determines the market because teams can't sign players, especially National League teams, if they don't know if there's going to be a DH or not. How do you not have this decided early on to say, all right, 2021, are we going to have a DH or no? That should have happened already. Very confused. Very, very, very confused. Trying to see if I forgot anything this week. Oh, golf. I liked the match 3. It was interesting. I like Charles Barkley with Phil Mickelson. That was a fun team to watch. But I think it would have been better with another pro golfer there, not just one. Stephen Payton did okay, but it kind of dragged at times. But I did enjoy it. The boxing I won't get into much. I did not watch any of the Mike Tyson, Roy Jones fight. I don't care that Jake Paul knocked out Nate Robinson, to be honest. I really don't. To me, when you had Tyson and Jones, it was basically a draw. They weren't allowed to knock each other out. I was not going to be into that fight. Maybe I'm different from all of you, but I'm not into that fight. So thank you all for tuning in. Special thanks again to Nick Swanson from Full Press Browns for hopping on. Special thanks to you, Janie Kelly from Myrtle Beach Post and Courier for hopping on to talk about the Coastal Carolina Chanticleers. Remember, 5:30 Eastern today on ESPNU, big game with BYU. It's going to be a fun matchup of two top 20 teams in college football. Again, follow me on Twitter at @RickNader555. Follow us on Twitter at Full Press Radio, at @FP_coverage. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts. Kicking with Keeler is there. And give us a rating. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you don't like. And feel free to email me, rickjkeeler@gmail.com. So from all of us here at Full Press Radio, I'm Ricky Keeler. Also reminding you that you can follow my work over at Pinstripe Prospects. We have the Chasing 28 podcast. But hopefully we'll have another episode this week recapping everything that's gone on with the Yankees in the last couple weeks. And you can catch my work about ESPN personalities at Barrett Sports Media. A couple articles I did this week. Jay Williams and Greg McElroy talking about why the Ravens-Steelers game was being played at all. And I did an article of Colin Coward saying that New Yorkers wouldn't recognize Jacob DeGrom coming out of a subway. But LA Stars are much better than New York. And Chris Madsock Russo said, I don't know where Coward got that from. To me, you could easily recognize Jacob DeGrom. He doesn't wear a helmet. That's the obvious one. But you could read that article over at Barrett Sports Media. So thank you to all for tuning in. We'll be back next week. I want to remind you all, stay safe. Please wear a mask, follow the rules, and we'll get through this together. I'm Ricky Keeler saying have a great rest of your weekend. Enjoy the football. Enjoy the college basketball. And I'll see you back here next week to look at a week 14 and closer to the college football playoff.